And now, Move the Sticks with Daniel Jeremiah and Bucky Brooks.
For the second time in franchise history, the Los Angeles Rams are Super Bowl champions, but for the first time, actually, in Los Angeles. Welcome, everybody, to Move the Sticks, following Super Bowl 56 and a 23-20 Rams victory over the Bengals. Rhett Lewis, former NFL scouts, Daniel Jeremiah, Bucky Brooks, all ready to rock and roll here for you. Guys, this was my second ever Super Bowl just going in and getting to see a little bit of the action from inside the venue. The last one I went to was the Patriots Giants Part 2, Super Bowl 46. And so to see the spectacle that was happening inside SoFi Stadium, DJ, even though I was only there for a quarter before having to go do the network duties, man, it was pretty special.
Yeah, it's pretty cool, man. I've been fortunate enough to be at 5-6 of these things, but that stadium is so incredible, and getting to be in there doing the Charger games is cool. But the Super Bowl just took it up to a whole different level, man. I mean, MJD, and we're talking before the game, just all the different things they've added in the stadium for the Super Bowl.
Yeah,
but Buck, I mean, Buck, you know, man, as a player, like it's so cool when you really don't have a rooting interest in the game. To see somebody, and you know, you have won the Super Bowl, to see somebody that you look at these guys who think about this since they're 4 or 5 years old, and then all of a sudden, man, you get to cash that in. It's pretty cool.
Now, look, it's really interesting in terms of watching it. You know, like the build up to the game. I was listening to NFL radio, and they were talking about how the Rams had been advised, like, hey, we're not going to go out early. We're going to kind of chill. We don't want to burn up all of that emotion. And they're saying the Bengals are out like early.
Oh, yeah, they were.
Atmosphere, they're running around and they're doing all of this other stuff. And, you know, I think there's something to learning how to play and handle that environment, even though I don't necessarily believe that it adversely affected the Bengals. I think there's something to being able to play on that big stage. And the more that you're able to play on it in a short span, I do believe it's advantageous because you kind of are able to treat it like another game. And for the Rams to have a home game, the advantages that they had being able to stay at home all week, practice at their own facilities, sleep in their own beds and all those things. I mean, it didn't reflect in the score, but I felt like it was a huge advantage in terms of the preparation part of it.
I agree. So I think we should kind of break this down, you know, half by half, look at what happened in the first half and then how things changed in the second half. And of course, that final drive, we will break down the Super Bowl MVP Cooper Kupp's performance, you know, who is a friend of the program from years and years and years and years and years ago, as you will all remember. And then a quick look at how the Bengals bounce back and how the Rams move forward off the win. So let's start. Look, first half headline was obviously Odell Beckham catches the first touchdown of the game. And the Rams go up, and then Odell goes down, and things don't feel as great for the Rams. And DJ, how did you see, first let's start with how Odell was impacting this game early, obviously with the score and a couple of big explosive plays, and then how you saw it kind of fizzle when he left.
Well, I thought going into this game that the Bengals were vulnerable in two areas. First of all, was on the outside at corner. I thought that there were some matchups that would really favor the Rams. And then I thought on the other side, it was the Bengals offensive line. How in the world are they going to block this front from the Rams? And it was interesting because it kind of saw it in different waves. In that first half with Odell early, when you had a healthy Odell out there with Cooper Kupp, it was a kind of a pick your poison type situation. And they were able to attack them. And I'm telling you guys, I haven't had a chance to go back and watch the tape yet. But they were even throwing the next gen stats up on the board inside the stadium, and it was like average yards of separation. And the difference between the separation that the Rams were getting versus what the Bengals were getting. Now the Bengals were hitting big plays and making things happen, but those are contested catches. Mm-hmm. There were dudes running free all over the place early in that game. And Stafford hit some. He missed a couple. One or two times he got a little bit of pressure. He couldn't see it, couldn't find it. But they couldn't cover those guys on the outside when Odell was out there. When he went out of the game, now it was like, okay, then, you know, Stafford tried to play as if he was still in the game instead of force feeding Cooper Kupp, which we'll get to later. But Buck, when he's just trying to find, you know, go through the progression, like they didn't have another guy. Like there was nobody. It was Ben Skowronek out there who's, you know, he's a great special teams player. He can't catch. So what do you do there?
Oh, yeah, look, you know what's amazing about it is we talked about the Rams and their star power. But I think what we saw in that game is how, like, being top heavy can impact you once one of your stars goes out. Yeah. You know, it's funny because we had kind of treated Odell like a bit player for most of the season. And then you saw the value when he's not on the field. And it also seemed like the Odell that we were getting on Super Bowl Sunday was classic Odell.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It looked like it was coming. It looked like he was about to have a monster game because he was fully lathered up and ready to go. And as we talked about it, the matchups just were not in the Bengals' favor because I was like, if Eli Apple is going to have to cover Odell Beckham Jr., he make trouble. Over 200 in the first half.
Trouble.
Yeah. And he was well on his way to having a big day. And you're right, because I felt like Matthew Stafford had been pounding into his head, hey, soft zone, just take what the defense gives you, check it down and do those things. Well, when you removed Odell, the check downs became negative plays. And to his credit, I do understand why Sean McVay was trying to run it. The Bengals dominated the game at the line of scrimmage.
Yeah.
Dominated 100%. The game at the line of
B.J.
scrimmage.
B.J. Hill, Hendrickson, and Hubbard were on it. I mean, the very first play of the game, I think, was the best run play of the day for the Rams. You guys remember that? It was like Cam Akers for like five yards, like squirted through. And that was the rest of the day.
Logan Wilson
played his butt off.
His whole family was sitting right in front of me. The grandma had Logan Wilson's grandma jacket on. That's what tipped me off that it was his family.
Is that what it was? Okay.
That's what it was. But that's great. No, he's a great player. And look, this kind of it's kind of interesting. I was getting some texts from some buddies in the league, and it said, man, this game's going to really, really be bothersome to those that think the most physical team wins. Like when you think about offensive line play and just they couldn't get any push at all, defensively, the Bengals, and we'll get to their issues in pass, but they were able to run the ball. They were able to, they had some, you know, Mixon had a couple 10, 13 yard runs mixed in there.
Chunk plays.
So it was definitely like, okay, that old adage of we're just going to beat you up like that. Nah, that's not it. So
here's the thing, DJ, like, and here's why if I'm Zach Taylor and I'm the Bengals organization, I feel crummy. We talk about the things that you have to traditionally do to win games. Like people talk about the DBOs, don't beat ourselves. So no turnovers, no penalties, no big plays allowed, any of that stuff. Well, the Bengals, by all accounts, they did that. And then old school coaches would tell you, hey, you got to run the ball and stop the run. They did that as well. And so in a game in which the Bengals basically did everything that you say from a philosophical standpoint that you need to do to win, they did. And they ended up on the short end of the stick. And we'll talk about it later on.
Yeah.
I feel like there was a 15-minute window where they could have choked the Rams out. They just needed another score. They just needed to put a two-score margin between them and the Rams. And I felt like the Rams would have fallen apart. You know, and so it was unfortunate for the Bengals.
Yeah, and so the Rams end up, you know, going into the locker room at the half up by a field goal, right? Because they had the missed extra point on the
huge miss.
On the second touchdown. It ended up being a huge miss, exactly. But then I felt like coming out of the second half, guys, there were like three segments. There was the Bengals opening, salvo,
bang,
right?
Bang, bang, bang. Yeah.
for the first time ever in a Super Bowl, we had a touchdown from scrimmage on the first play of scrimmage of either half. I mean, obviously we've had kickoff returns for scores, right? But that was the first time we've ever seen a touchdown on the first play from scrimmage in either half. And that was T. Higgins from Joe Burrow for 75. Then you come back and Matthew Stafford has the interception, right? That bounces off the hands of Ben Skowronek, which should have been a catch or at minimum an incompletion, turns into an interception. And now you're like, oh boy.
Oh, you can feel it. You can feel the momentum. You can feel the momentum like changing. And to their credit, the Rams defense, they did exactly
what
they
out.
They're supposed to come out there, put the fire out, make them kick three. Another a touchdown there. And I'm
might have done it.
Saying, here we go. Yeah.
I was like, man, might have done it. This thing might go completely.
Because then I think they could have ran the ball. They could have shortened the game, ran the ball, and got out of there.
But then we had a stretch where we had the next segment of the half was seven straight punts combined from both teams. We had three possessions for the Rams and four for the Bengals that end in punts, DJ. At what point were you like, whoa, whoa, whoa? I mean, I get the defenses are stepping up here, and the Rams, who had, seven sacks in the game, six of them come in the second half, and that's a part of some of those possessions. But, man, like, where do the offenses go?
It was what we thought when we previewed this game, and we talked about it for an entire week. And we would go in a million different directions, and I felt like we always landed on the same spot, which is, how are they going to block these guys?
Yeah.
They're just not going to be able to do it. And I mean, it's no, you don't want to dog out these offensive linemen for the Bengals, but we talk about how you build championship teams and we say, okay, you don't necessarily need to build. You don't need to put Anthony Munoz and Tony Boselli as your bookends. Yeah. You don't need to have that type of an offensive line. You can't have tomato cans. You can't have a mark. You can't have somebody that gets circled when you're playing them going, he cannot block anyone. So we are going to isolate our best player on him. The Bengals have two or three of those guys.
Yeah.
So you're trying to block with Von Miller, who played his butt off, man. And this was another thing we talked about, that he just kept turning the dial up as he went all the way through the year, especially when he had sacks in seven straight games or whatever it was. Yeah. He had two last night. I mean, if it was hockey, he'd have had an assist on two or three more because he was the disruption that was causing the chaos that led to the sack. But they couldn't block him. Obviously, Aaron Donald, whatever he wanted. A'shaun Robinson he played really well as well. Leonard Floyd did his. They were just so much better. And then early in the game, what they were able to do was they were able to spread them out, and Burrow was getting the ball out quick. Well, then what happened is you saw the field start to shrink, and the Rams just said, we're just going to cover up these first window throws. They're not going to give you that.
They can hold it now, for a beat.
And I bet when you go back and look at it, and I know the last play is a great example. You could see it just watching it live on the field. You know, I don't know if it was Ramsey that was on Jamar, but he had gotten on top of him, and it's literally home run, game over, Bengals win if he has another second to throw.
And let me ask you this, they bet
on the fact that you're not going to have that time. You know, all the big plays were Joe climbing up and getting away and buying a little extra time. Bang,
taking a shot.
That was it.
And then we were talking about it a lot with Sean O'Hara and LT as I was doing the halftime and the postgame coverage, especially in the second half for the postgame. It felt like they made an adjustment to get Aaron Donald going and to get him more one-on-one. And it started with putting the linebacker over the center, right?
Cover him up.
Jones.
Give us a sense, Buck, of what that does for a player like AD.
Well, early in the game, what they were doing is when the center was uncovered, he was identifying 99 and was working back to 99 to give extra protection. Well, now by putting the man right over top of him, he doesn't have that luxury because he has to at least pay attention to the guy in front of him to make sure that he doesn't rush. And that allowed Aaron Donald to have really like a runway, a one-on-one on the guard. And he got
both of them too.
Oh, he took it. Whichever way you want to go, Aaron. Yeah. And he wore them out doing that. And so give Raheem Morris credit because defensively, it was a lot on their shoulders because, Red, you alluded to the fact that they were like seven straight possessions with a punt. I felt like the Rams blew opportunities because they got the ball twice at the 50-yard line.
Midfield,
And didn't do
47
anything
and 48.
With it. Didn't do anything with it. And the defense had to keep holding serve and had to keep coming and holding on. And they were able to do it enough to give them an opportunity that final drive to get it done. But, Aaron Donald found a way to get it done. And I'm going to say this about Aaron Donald. I'm sure we do it. If this dude retires, like
he's not retiring. Stop.
If I'm just saying, like he's talking about it. He was very coy, even in this thing. If he retires, like at the top,
it's
like
Barry Sanders all over again.
Like he wants more cash. We need more cash for Aaron Donald. Give it to him.
He can get it. If he says literally, I just don't know if I have the heart in it. You don't think that Les would come back to him and say, "Let me help. Let me help your heart here a little."
Yeah, just 30 mil per. Help your heart a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, that's what I would do.
Because I was like, this came out of nowhere. Like, oh, he doesn't know. He's going to retire 8 years in, three-time defensive player of the year, who is absolutely crushing it.
Yeah.
He's going to leave. I mean, you talk about ultimate mic drop. I was like, I don't know if I've ever seen a player like just, I'm going to kiss the game goodbye. Like Jim Brown, that's it.
Yeah.
Dale Sayers.
Yeah. Barry, the whole thing. Yeah, Calvin, all that. I mean, that's. It would be interesting, but you're right, DJ. I feel like this was probably maybe taken a little bit out of context. And the same with McVay. Like,
I mean, everybody's going to quit now.
McVay's not retiring at 30.
Yeah, everybody's going to quit now and go to TV and do some other stuff. I mean,
he basically said no in our post game. He also just said, just so you guys know, because they just did the famous, interview.
Sean Payton's favorite.
Yeah, this is so apparently it's a Sean thing. And Sean McVay goes, "This is torture having to do this at 8:30 in the morning after winning the Super Bowl." So that's basically just calling everything special. And here's one that I'm going to leave you with because we're going to get into our the final drive, both offensively and defensively for the Rams, yeah, deserves its own segment, and we're going to give it to you. But Sean McVay on Cooper Kupp this morning: I'm better as a coach and as a person for being around Cooper Kupp. Guys like Cooper Kupp are why you coach. And I think we can all agree on that. Your Super Bowl MVP was the MVP of the final drive for sure, and certainly the catalyst for the Rams' success this season. Dig into Cooper and how the Rams sealed this victory right after this. All right, back here with you on Move the Sticks. Cooper Kupp was the catalyst for the Rams on that final drive. Obviously, it doesn't happen without Matthew Stafford, but if not for the fourth and 1 7-yard run, on the sweep coming around, as DJ said, you know, you kind of feel that coming. You got to find a way to get it into Cooper Kupp's hands on a play like that to extend the drive on what ended up being a 15-play, 79-yard drive that, of course, ended with Cooper Kupp's fourth reception on the drive and a 1-yard touchdown on a little fade stop from Stafford to give them the 23-20 lead. One, of course, in which they held on to. He had some big plays in this game, DJ, obviously in the first half, some chunk plays. And then, you know, had the touchdown as well. But man, that last drive was special. Like that's what MVPs are. That's it.
No doubt. And to go back to some of the earlier stuff, even the production he had in the first half, he got held a lot, man. They swallowed the whistles a little bit. Yeah, oh, really? They swallowed the whistles to the last 2 minutes of the game, and then they blew everything. But it was fun. But and you know, the thing about him, I was watching him after the play where he'd get held on like a crosser, and there was no, like, he was not real demonstrative. He just kind of like jog over to the ref just real quick and then jog back to the huddle. But, no, at the end of the game, guys, and I'll get to Cooper specifically, yeah, but one of the takeaways I wanted to get in there is, you think about all the teams that we've been associated with and think about those practices and think about the mundane, like, training camp practice, and you look at the practice sheet and it says short yardage, you know, and it just kind of blends into the practice, right? And but you do short yardage stuff every practice. You work on that stuff. And that game was such a realization to me of, I don't even know if you can spend enough time on that.
Still maybe not figured out. Yeah.
Because some teams are so good at it and some teams are so astonishingly bad at it. And it literally decided a championship. One team successful in short yards, the other team was unsuccessful in short yardage. And I'm sitting here going, Buck, I'll get it to you, because you've been saying this, and since, gosh, we've known each other forever, players not plays. And I'm going down with my players. And that's why I'm sitting here going, I don't care if Cooper Kupp is a tight end, a receiver, a tackle. He's your best player. He's getting the football on fourth and one. And it's just like what the 49ers would do with Deebo Samuel. Everybody in the stadium would know. I don't care where they line Deebo up. He's getting the football because you trust him. And sure enough, he lines up. I lean over to my son. I go, yeah, this is a jet sweep to Cooper Kupp. And then sure enough, he's short motion, then boom, he explodes, and then off you go. So it was getting the ball in his hands, and then after that it was like he was in the zone. And Stafford, give him credit as well, he said, I'm not going to give Ben Skronik another chance. Like that ship sailed. We are going to wear out Cooper Kupp and go win a Super Bowl.
So here's what I feel like happened in the game, and I know they would never admit it. I feel like Matthew Stafford and Cooper Kupp like went along with the game plan the entire game, and then they're looking up at the clock and they're like, hey man, it's 2 minutes left. We're about to trick off a Super Bowl if we don't get it done. And I feel like at that moment, Matthew Stafford was like, come hell or high water, the ball is going to number 10. And I'm throwing to number 10. And yeah, we can, coach, you can call all these plays, whatever it is, wherever Cooper Kupp is, I'm doing it. And then word got out that even on the touchdown, he moved Cooper Kupp outside because Cooper Kupp had been inside. And so
that's Odell's play. That's Odell's.
Yes.
Run. Yeah. And so we've heard McVay mic'd up talk about that.
And so what I'm surprised at is when Odell went out with the extended halftime, my expectation was that Sean McVay was going to sit down with Matthew Stafford and Cooper Kupp and try and figure out a way, hey, we got to make sure that this guy gets 12 targets in this half. So how can we motion him, shift him, rearrange the furniture to put him in spots to kind of make the bracket tough? And I never saw that into the last drive where they just force-fed Cooper Kupp, because I'm saying, man, it seemed like the game would have been a lot easier if they had just force-fed Cooper Kupp, because you don't catch 140-plus passes without the ball being forced in your direction. And so to me, I just wonder about Sean McVay's game planning, particularly in big games, because it's the second time we've seen it in the Super Bowl where it just kind of like it doesn't look like the team that we saw entering the game. And he was bailed out in this one. But that's something that he has to figure out, how in these big games I can be an asset, not a detriment to the offense and the team.
Yeah. And look, I think it's pretty cool. I think it's like the sixth or seventh time or something that, that a wide receiver has won the MVP. I think it speaks to, for Cooper, I think it speaks to, like what we've expected of him all season. Like, he would have gotten my MVP vote just because I felt like this is a year where the quarterbacks kind of could have canceled themselves out, and Brady and Rodgers. And I would have been fine to have seen him won the MVP.
Yeah, honestly, yeah. I mean, I'm with you on that.
He ends up as the OPOY. He was the most uncoverable wide receiver in the game this year, and he decided the biggest game. Like, it just it felt fitting. And I shouldn't say he alone, because defense had to make a stop at the end, boys. And that's why you pay Aaron Donald, DJ, whatever he wants. Because now, I will say this. If that last play where he pressured Burrow into that, flailing incompletion, if that was a sack, and if Donald had three, if all the MVP ballots
he'd have been the MVP. Yeah.
And I'd have been probably okay with that too at that point.
No, but the interesting thing is, and this goes back to what I was just talking about, just you having that plan for those situations. I just didn't feel like the Bengals, I did not love their plan. I didn't love their fourth down call in the first half on their side of the field.
Yeah, but they gave one up. Yeah,
that was, I throw a spot route. Like, I didn't like that.
Higgins was wide open on that play, but yeah.
They had another, another situation in short yards where they went empty, and Joe, I love that. Get empty, then use him as a runner, because you fanned everyone out. It's a light box. Let him find a lane and go get 2 yards. It's a piece of cake. I thought that's what they were going to go back to on that last play. But before we get to that, so they have a big gain on first down. So they're second short. Then it's he tries to take the deep shot to Ja'Marr Chase. They're not on the same page. Then you run the ball with P-Ryan, which I don't like. To me, players not play. P-Ryan's not touching the ball in that situation.
So that was P-Ryan who ran it. That wasn't Mixon.
Yes, that was P-Ryan.
Why is P-Ryan in the game?
Chris Evans got more touches than P-Ryan.
And then you're in side saddle in the shotgun on fourth and short, which to me, you have options. Like, the options are, you're under center, whether you're going to sneak it or just run it traditional run. Or you could also set up play action off that from being under center. Or if you're in the gun, you are an empty. There is no way on God's green earth that you have a back there with you. That's just getting one more defender into the box. Why would you do that? Everybody knows you're not going to shotgun run on fourth in the season on the line. Like, that's not happening.
Yeah,
there's no threat of that.
Yeah, the ball has to go to Burrow. A couple things in talking about the Rams defense. DJ, I think last night it dawned on me now more than ever when we talk about, like, building a championship team. I might take the cornerback out of the equation. I think the emphasis has to be on the front line. I think if I could load it up, if you're telling me, hey, you only get a handful of dollars to allocate or a handful of pieces to build your defense, I think I'm going to take the multiple pass rushers up front, because I think you can get by with average corners. And I'm going to say this, and look, I've been his biggest advocate for a long time. It's not just me. I think Jalen Ramsey has lost a step or two. I think throughout the postseason, we have seen him give up big play after big play over the top. And when I watch him give up big plays, I don't know if he can run anymore. And so people will talk about T. Higgins, like, oh, he face masked or whatever. Elite players are not supposed to be in a position where it should even be close. He should have been on top and those things. And I'm going to be honest with you. Ja'Marr Chase almost wins the game on that turnaround right that Jalen jumps it.
He almost wins the game. I wanted him watching it, and I'm sitting here going, man, just I'd rather take my chances with you. He could have cut it back. Like, if they tackle you in play, we can.
Well, it's enough time.
There was still 4 or 5 yards from a defender when he went out of bounds. And I get it, you're saving time, but I'm also like, dude, you are a freak show.
You're the best player.
Let's take our chances with that back end trying to tackle you if you cut that back.
Because Jalen is squatting on it, and Joe Burrow threw it outside. Mm-hmm. And when Ja'Marr Chase spins, I was like, uh-oh.
Yeah.
Because we've seen it. A million times this year where he catches and runs and he weaves. And I was like, he might go to the house. Yeah. He goes out of bounds because he's been conditioned to do it. But I just thought in that when Jalen had asked very loudly, oh, I want to check the best guy, and T. Higgins and Ja'Marr Chase are wearing him out on these deep balls, I was like, yeah, we might want to pipe down. And it was one of those situations where I felt like the Rams were forced to play zone, because number 5 was becoming more of a liability than an asset in that game.
Yeah, and maybe we find out. You know, maybe something was ailing him. You know, you never know. Pride. In this situation. No, well, I hear you.
Because they were throwing at him.
Yeah. But I, yeah, it, look, that was actually one of the other parts of the Bengals game plan or play calling that kind of irked me is that after that big one-handed grab he had in the first half, which gets him down to
the pig,
they didn't go back to him once. No. They had three straight incompletions. You know, I'm like, back to one. Right, I'd go, you know, tempo up to the ball right now. Yeah. Let's get it back to him. And they had to settle for three there. But look, it's
by the way, can I give you one other guy? For the Rams as we're kind of handing them their flowers. Ernest Jones, I'm going to go back and try and find my notes. He was in last year's draft, right? He was in 2021.
Seventh rounder, I think, right?
So I was an Ernest Jones guy. I know because I talked to Les about him during the process. Let me see. Ernest Jones.
No, sorry. Ernest was third round of last year's draft. Yeah.
What pick number was he, right?
103.
Okay, he was my 99th player.
Oh, right on target.
This is a classic case of don't trust the watch, trust your eyes. So he was 6014. He was 230. He ran 4.71 at his pro day. Well, at a pro day, usually you will run faster with the combine. Right. So that's even, you would think, oh gosh, it's even worse. He played so much faster than that. So here are my notes on him. Inside linebacker, quick flow and fill. He can rush off the edge. He's got excellent length to free himself. He killed Kyle Pitts at the point of attack in the Florida game. He's a violent tackler. He's very athletic in coverage. So they benefited. And this is, again, what we'll be talking about a lot as we go into the spring. These teams have access to all the GPS stuff. You know, we get it with the NFL through Next Gen. These teams, NFL teams, have it with college players. We don't necessarily get our eyes on all that stuff. But everything I was told was all his GPS stuff matched up with what you saw with your eyes. And the watch was not great. But they ended up getting a great player who, again, is what teams are looking for, and we'll talk about this a bunch, is length and off-the-ball linebackers because it's not only a factor, you know, being able to get off blocks, play off blocks. It's you're clogging lanes in the passing game with all that length. This is a really good player, and to me, he's like a little window into how they've been able to get this accomplished. We've talked about all their stars and how the stars delivered. But those stars are filled in with these glue guys, these third round, fourth round picks, guys like Ernest Jones.
I would venture to say that Les Snead has been the best in football at second and third round outside of Tutu Atwell. The second and third round picks, and maybe he ends up being a good one. But those, I mean, you just go down the line: Havenstein,
Akers,
Cooper Kupp, Akers, Van Jefferson. I mean, Ernest Jones. It's just the list goes on, and that's how you fill out a roster when you don't have a first round pick.
I think it's about the coaches and the front office working in lockstep to be able to do it.
Knowing what they want.
Yeah, they look, in having the Star Wars approach that they've had where they're bringing people in, it also takes coaches to get those guys on the same page. Sonny Michel coming in, OBJ coming in the middle of the year. Some of the developmental players that we're talking about playing well. But I think the guy who probably doesn't get enough credit, Eric Weddle had the green dot.
I know.
In the game.
Torres back last night.
Right. Eric Weddle in 5 weeks learns the entire defense to the point where he is calling it. Yeah. And DJ and I had talked and read, I can't remember if I had included you in the conversation, but I felt like Eric Weddle was a necessary addition because at the point of the season, Jalen Ramsey was the caller. He had the green dot. And I felt like he's far too emotional to be the traffic cop in the field. And they had guys who were busting coverage, Taylor Rapp and those guys. When Eric Weddle comes, they didn't really have the bust that they were having that was really plaguing them. Like Ramsey was giving up plays, but you didn't have these egregious errors. Eric Weddle was an underrated addition that you don't think that someone coming off the couch having not played 2 years would be able to come and make an impact. He had a huge impact on the game. And when he tore his pec, I was like, man, how is this guy going to stay in and play? But he
happened like the first possession. He stayed in the whole game. It's insanity.
Unbelievable, man.
Can I ask you guys a question? I'm just literally thinking about this. We've seen now McVay having been to two and won one, right? McVay, the tree is everywhere. All his guys are everywhere. And we're going to continue to see that. We've got several guys in this cycle that have gone.
O'Connell's going. Yeah.
O'Connell. And then even from that same, you know, tree, McDaniel's down in Miami.
Yeah.
They all kind of come from that same Shanahan, LaFleur, the whole, they're all intertwined here. So those guys know that scheme, and Bucky, you know this too, man. They know exactly what they want. And you talk to those offensive coaches, they want interchangeable receivers. We talk about basketball teams, they don't look at it like that. They look at, we want guys that can play every single spot and we can interchange them. They want offensive linemen that are a certain way, that can move and with the outside zone and do those things. So here's my question. We would always have this argument. Okay, you bring in a new coach. Hey, I know you have your scheme and what you believe in, but here's what we have. So why don't you adapt what you do to what we have? I think that the success of Sean is going to embolden these guys to say, look, I know what I want and I know what I run and I know it works. You might have this player that you think that's great, that's been to three Pro Bowls and he's been a good player for you. He doesn't fit me. So he's out. We're trading him. Trust me. I know the guys that I need to get to bring in to run my scheme and do what I do. And I think a lot of times we talk about who the Rams brought in. There's a lot of guys leaving too now that they traded out, that they moved on from, you know, Brandon Cooks of the world. Yeah. So I think that I hope that this is right, because it will be fun for us that we will see a flurry of activity for teams saying, hey, I know this is a great player, Buck, but yeah, what I'm going to run, he doesn't match.
Didn't fit.
Yeah, you know, the funny thing is, like, I feel like they definitely are like that on offense, but defensively they're not like that, because Aaron Donald was not a perfect fit, and they've had three different defensive coordinators doing that little run under McVay: Wade Phillips, Brandon Staley, and then Raheem Morris. And actually, Aaron Donald, the way he played under Wade Phillips is different than the way he played under Staley. And also,
well, can we put the arguably the greatest defensive player of all time discussion?
No, we can't. But I do believe there's something to it, because we always talk about, like, a fit and scheme is the number one thing when it comes to the evaluation. And how do you overhaul a team to be able to do it? I think in looking at your example, when we look at the Bengals, and it would be interesting to see if we sat in with the Bengals, particularly on offense. Jamar Chase's football IQ, T. Higgins' football IQ. Yeah. Tyler Boyd was a holdover, so he doesn't necessarily count. But Joe Mixon, holdover too. But, like, I would love to get their collective football IQ, because the one thing that kind of goes with all of those teams, it appears that all of their skill players are able to handle a heavy workload in terms of, like, mental capacity, versatility, those things. And so I do wonder how they figured that part out, because I think you have to be a smart player to play in that system on offense. I don't know what their defense is like, but offensively, to be able to bounce around and play X, Z, and elephant or eagle, the third receiver, that is not an easy deal. You really have to be a conceptual learner, not just a guy that, like, oh, this is my spot, this is all I learned.
Right. So, guys, while Super Bowl 56 is now over, I mean, because this is Move the Sticks and this next 3 months is what we love, we get a second Super Bowl, which is coming up in about 3 months at the end of April with the 2022 NFL Draft Combine coming up. Free agency, obviously, big chance for teams to now try to figure out where they want to move into 2022 and how they can get back to the mountaintop like the Los Angeles Rams did this year. And so we'll look at both these teams, take a quick break here, look at both these teams, and maybe identify one position of priority. I think you can guess what we're looking at for the Cincinnati Bengals, but one position of priority for each of these teams as they move forward to try to get back to the spot next year when we come back. So the Rams are Super Bowl champs. The Bengals will now look to regroup and try to bolster their roster in efforts to get back to this moment and then to be the ones holding the Vince Lombardi trophy when the last game has hit zeros. But let's start with the champs. And as we talked about, this was a study in team building. And while they may have taken some different philosophies along the way, it ended up working for both teams. And big reason why it worked for Les Snead and company: stars played when they needed them to, but they hit on some of those outside of the first round picks, a bunch of them, right, that helped fill out this roster and became playmakers on their own. So DJ, if you're looking at this Rams team right now, might have some turnover. We don't know what happens with what's going to happen with Von Miller. Sounds like he's going to test free agency fully. So we'll see there. Leonard Floyd has been a nice player. Are you looking on the defensive side or like the Bengals, are you looking for offensive linemen to try to help this run game?
Yeah, I think they've got, you know, you've got Whitworth. They got to figure out there. I know Noteboom will step in and fill that spot as a good young player. I believe their center's a free agent. So they've got some free agents along that offensive line. I think you could look to continue to add there. And then defensively, I mean, when you look at what this offense did in year one with Matthew Stafford, it's kind of like we saw with Tom, you know, even though they didn't win it this year, you saw Brady's numbers still for a zillion yards in year two in that system. I think Stafford being younger, I think it's going to be even better offensively next year. So when you have a explosive offense like that and you get, you know, Robert Woods coming back, Buck, to me, like you were just saying earlier, I can't have enough pass rushers, man. Just keep loading up because you're going to be playing with a lead more often than not.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm loading up, and I'm loading up with the intention. Like, it's funny you talk about the pass rushers and the offense getting better with Stafford returning. I think two things could be in play to make the offense really pop. One, Robert Woods combined with Odell Beckham Jr. and Cooper Kupp. You talk about three receivers that are dynamic, depending on the injury situation for all of them, because they all have to come back from
the
whatever.
You got to pay Odell, too.
Yeah, but, you know, like, he's on record saying he'd take, like, a little cut.
Well, and what happens now with the knee injury? You know, we don't know what the knee injury is yet. At this,
I mean, I'm not a doctor, but I think we all know what that looked like. But we'll.
It didn't look great.
No,
it didn't look great.
And that would be the second time on that knee.
Yeah,
yeah, it didn't look great. So you think about that. But DJ, I think you're right, because the reason why I want to add more pass rushers is if Von Miller decides to come back and he stays in LA, I want to keep him fresh, man. I want to kind of keep him on the pitch count the first half of the season, the first three quarters of the season, and kind of break him out of the packaging as we get down the stretch, because that's what he did this year. You talked about sacks in seven straight games and the way that he was able to kind of impose his will in the postseason. I kind of want to do the same thing with him, and I would like to also consider how can I taper off some of Aaron Donald's minutes to make sure that he is able to dominate down the stretch, because with a 17 game season and because it's so long and because they're going to be in a position to be right back, I want to make sure that I have my pieces lined up where we're going. So yes, adding a couple more pass rushers would certainly be on the agenda.
And then for the Bengals, look, obviously it starts up front. I think, you know, nobody's starts, hiding that, right?
Starts, ends, all of it.
Yeah. The whole deal. I mean, look, Jonah Williams, look, they might have a complete Chiefs-style remake of this offensive line. And
they should. That should be the goal.
And Jonah Williams is the guy who sticks, right? He's the one who sticks around, and then they try to figure out the other four spots. Is that how you feel, Deej?
Yeah, I mean, the guards and right tackle, I mean, you've got to get better. And the good news is I think they can, with what they're playing with, I think even second, third, fourth round picks, you're going to get upgrades in this draft. Like, there is some quality depth in this draft.
Draft all linemen. We're gonna bring in a whole new crew, and we're gonna just let them.
Well, I mean, I look at you know, we've talked about the Chiefs so much, right? And how they rebuilt it. I saw it doing the Charger games. The Chargers went out and made Corey Lindsey the highest paid center. They went out and signed Filer, who shored up the guard spot. Then they went out and drafted Rashawn Slater. They actually signed Ode Abushi, who was starting until he got hurt in the second week of the season or something like that. But they added three really, I mean, all pro type player in Rashawn Slater, all pro type player in Lindsley, and a really, really solid starter in Filer. So, I mean, that's, if the Bengals can do that, even if they just say, you know, we're going to upgrade three of these spots, oh my gosh, they'll be in such a better place.
Yeah,
much better place. Like, I think it's all about the offensive line. I would say, like, DJ talks about the offensive.
How about
line.
A corner as well, though?
I was going to that. Like, because here's the thing: they paid money for Trey Waynes. They haven't been able to get a return on an investment there. The rest of the guys have been kind of free agent. Awuzie played well for them when he had moments. Eli Apple is the experience on the island. I think they need to upgrade that. But yeah, but if I'm the Bengals, based on the way that they played, I would just continue to throw more resources at the corner position because they play really, I mean, they play really well on defense.
And they got to sign Jesse Bates. We know that. Like, they've got some in-house stuff that they got to take care of there. Just a quick look ahead. Teron Armstead, Orlando Brown's a free agent, but I imagine KC's going to figure that out, probably on a franchise tag if they have to. And then Brandon Sheriff, kind of an interesting one there on the interior. Mm-hmm. For teams looking for an upgrade, do you try to go all in for a player like that?
You've got Jensen
in the center from Tampa. Yeah. So just there'll be some options, but there will be some money spent along that offensive line. Perhaps the Bengals are
they
involved
pay their coach
in
too.
Some way. Oh, there it is.
They got to pay the coach. He's
sounds
the
like both,
paid.
Both coaches.
Yeah, he's the lowest paid head coach in the National Football League. Time for an upgrade.
I think he's earned a bump. think he's earned a bump.
Just a little bump, a little something.
All right, fellas, I think that's going to do it for us here on Move the Sticks. Of course, remember to check out all of our draft content over on the YouTube channel and on the NFL's YouTube channel. And, of course, we'll be back with you later this week.